Going through many of the questions that have been submitted for questions and answers, and this one has to do with civil disobedience, and it's a good question, but it's hard to give a good answer. So we'll see what we can do this evening in that regard, and then next Sunday evening try to cover several of the questions, but this one required a little length of time in order to accomplish. The first thing is in Romans chapter 13, verses 1 and 2, and this is the question that was asked. This passage is commonly used to instruct Christians to comply with the laws of the land and subject themselves to the authority of the government they live under. Based on these verses, would it be sinful for a Christian to participate in acts of civil disobedience or civil wars? For example, would it have been sinful for a Christian to participate in the Revolutionary War, which was a civil war against England? Would a Christian be able to participate in a sit-in like some did in the 60s civil rights movement? At what point is it okay for a Christian to rebel against a government since governments are ordained by God? That's the question. Now, the answer. These questions are difficult. I know when you read Romans 13, 1 through 5, it doesn't sound like it'd be difficult to answer. And I don't know how most brethren would answer these questions. In fact, I asked at a preacher's meeting while we were gone recently, and none of the preachers had any particular comments to make that were helpful. So much for letting someone else answer this question for me. But we should remind ourselves, first of all, of the conditions that existed in the first century. Rome was the fourth world kingdom about which we read, about which King Nebuchadnezzar dreamed and Daniel gave the interpretation. And he said that in the days of those kings, that is the Roman kings, the church would be established, and it is a kingdom that shall never be destroyed. Because it is a spiritual kingdom, and Jesus is her resurrected and permanent king. Another point to keep in mind is that in the first century, many of the Jews, and some of them may have become Christians, really despised Rome. I don't know if you can see it on the screen, but that little placard up there is Romans Go Home. I don't think that would have lasted very long on any street in any city that was in the Roman Empire. The Jews who were zealots wanted to fight against Rome and to overthrow them. There had been a successful rebellion a couple of hundred years earlier against Antiochus Epiphanes, led by Judas Maccabeus and his brothers. And the zealots undoubtedly recalled that and being able to throw off the rulership, at least until Rome came along. And then once again, they lost their freedoms because Rome was too powerful to successfully defend against. So here they found themselves ruled by the Romans, whom they despised, but which had rulership over them. And then a fourth thing to keep in mind is that this spiritual kingdom, the church, would eventually destroy Rome, but not through violence. That is not the type of kingdom that the church is. It's a spiritual kingdom. It advances through the spreading of the idea of the gospel. It does not advance through swords, through guns, spears, or any kind of man-made weapons. God did not design it that way. So it is not to be done through violence. And by the way, in the movie for tonight, which I highly recommend that you see, although you're not going to agree with how everything is treated in the movie, but that's one of the things that some of the Christians deal with, is how far can we go in resisting Rome when they're putting to death and persecuting Christians? This might not be something that we grapple with, but it certainly was something that Christians in those early centuries had to grapple with. And so these are some things then to keep in mind. Paul deals with the relationship of the Christian to the civil government in Romans 13, and he says to cooperate. And he gives several reasons for doing so, as you heard just a few moments ago. It is not through physical rebellion that Christianity will become the dominant kingdom. You know, Jesus and the apostles did not train Christians as soldiers to fight against Rome. They conquered Rome, but not in a physical way. They conquered because of their faith and their loyalty and their steadfastness and their commitment to truth. But they did not conquer through physical means. And so it's not through that kind of rebellion that Christianity will become the dominant kingdom. Christians took these words to heart, perhaps also recalling what Jesus told Peter on the night he was betrayed in Matthew 26:52, when he said, "All who take the sword shall perish by the sword." Jesus's crucifixion was not right, you might say. It was not proper. He was not given a fair trial. There was nothing fair about what happened. And you would be exactly right in saying that. But God allowed it to occur, to accomplish a greater purpose, namely our salvation. He also allowed Christians to be persecuted in the first, second, and third centuries, and killed even, because while they were remaining faithful, the faith triumphed. And when they lost their lives, they were made part of the eternal kingdom. And the gospel spread because of their commitment and because of their faithfulness. Was it right that Christians should be persecuted and put to death? No, absolutely not. But it had a good effect in reaching even more people with the truths of the gospel. So this is the context in which Paul writes. Obey the civil government, even when it is unfair. Jesus said even to cooperate with others when they impose upon you. Don't just walk 1 mile, go with them too. And this relates, we are told, to soldiers who could commandeer civilians to carry their baggage for them. You know, we sometimes see on television shows and things of that nature where a policeman flashes a badge and said, "Get out of your car, I need to use it." And you pretty much need to cooperate if that happens. They have the authority to do that. Well, a Roman soldier could say, "You there, I need you to carry this for me for a mile, because I'm weary and I'm worn, and you just need to carry it for me." Jesus is saying, go ahead and do it 2 miles. Is it going to interrupt your day? I expect so. You know, if you go 1 or 2 miles, that's possibly going to take an extra 45 minutes out of your day or more, because then you may need to go back to where you were. So, it's an imposition, but Jesus says to endure that imposition. Okay, well, what about wars? Generally speaking, what is recorded in Romans 13 is to the individual and not nations. It is addressed to the individual, not nations. Wars between countries have been occurring since the Tower of Babel. That was one of the reasons for the being cast into all the world. First of all, God had commanded it and they hadn't obeyed it, so God forced them to go into all the world. And countries and nations developed, and it wasn't too long before these started to war against one another. In Genesis chapter 14, verses 1 and 2, it came to pass in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of nations, that they made war with Bera, king of Sodom, Bersha, king of Gomorrah, Shinab, king of Admah, Shemeber, king of Zeboim, and the king of Bela, that is Zoar. So we have, I think this is the first recorded conflict. We have four kings going out against five kings. And apparently, the five kings, and by the way, these are the five kings in the cities of the plain: Sodom, Gomorrah, Admah, Zeboim, and Zoar. Four of those were destroyed. It would have been all five, except Lot pleaded that God spare Zoar. We know that these were not righteous kings, but we don't know that those who conquered them were any more righteous. At any rate, they had been paying tribute, apparently, for about a dozen years, and they rebelled, and so they were taken captive out of their land, including Lot and his family. So, what did Abraham do? Say, well, I guess they're under another civil government now. It's out of my hands. No. We find out what he did in Genesis chapter 14, verses 13 through 16. Then one who had escaped came and told Abraham, Abram the Hebrew, for he dwelt by the terebinth trees of Mamre, the Amorite, a brother of Eshcol and brother of Aner, and they were allies with Abram. Now when Abram heard that his brother was taken captive, he armed his 318 trained servants who were born in his own house and went in pursuit as far as Dan. He divided his forces against them by night, and he and his servants attacked them and pursued them as far as Hobah, which is north of Damascus. So he brought back all the goods, and also brought back his brother Lot and his goods, as well as the women and the people. So that's what Abraham's response was. He just didn't say, well, c'est la vie, because they didn't have French back then. he just didn't toss it aside and say, well, there's nothing to do about it now. Likewise, when David's family was taken by the Amalekites while he was away, he went after them, conquered them, and brought back what was his. He just didn't shrug his shoulders and say, well, it's out of my hands now. They're under some other civil government. No, that's not how the way it works, and that's not how Romans 13 was intended to be applied. He was not content to turn them over and get rid of them. What Paul taught individuals in Romans 13 does not necessarily apply to nations and wars. God himself persuaded Pharaoh to let Israel have their own sovereignty as a nation to be ruled over by God. And he commanded the Israelites and fought for them in the conquering of Canaan. Of course, there were many wars that God did not authorize. Those he did as punishment. But a lot of times, prophets foretold what was going to happen in these incidents. Jeremiah even instructed King Zedekiah to surrender to Babylon, which, of course, most people in Jerusalem abhorred that kind of advice. But that's what Jeremiah instructed him to do. And if he had, the nation would have fared much better. And the people would have fared much better. But Zedekiah refused to cooperate. God does rule in the affairs of men. Now, as pertains to the Revolutionary War, others may have different views of this, but Americans believe that the cause against the British was just. And since that time, and keeping in mind that God does rule in the affairs of men and that we did become a sovereign nation, we have accomplished much good in the world since attaining independence. We have also failed at times to do what was right, but we have a system which lets us get things right eventually. Although we have not done so yet with respect to abortion, there are still things that need to be corrected and righted in this country. Hitler and Hirohito, through the providence of God, were defeated in World War II. Even the Cold War was won with the Berlin Wall coming down. I don't know that how much, everybody always says God is on our side. I don't know how much we can say things like that, but we can sometimes notice that results are good for certain things that have occurred. But it's difficult to say when a nation should or should not go to war. Each situation probably needs to be weighed on its own merits. Now, what about the other part of the question, civil disobedience? I don't know if Henry David Thoreau was the first American to advocate civil disobedience, but his work is often quoted. And we might be tempted to say, and not without cause, well, Paul addressed this, so the answer is clear. But we do need to note that our system of government is not like any other government that we are aware of that has ever existed. How many nations described in the Bible had a constitution and elected their leaders? None. We're dealing with something that's different than what has existed before. Babylon didn't do that. Medo-Persia didn't do that. The Greek Empire did not do that. The Romans, I think, did have elections for senators, but it wasn't anything like what we experience. And here's another thing to keep in mind. How many of these nations could you freely speak without fear of reprisal? How many think that they could go up to King Nebuchadnezzar and say, I don't like the way you're running the country? Now, you can do that as an American, but it might have been your last words in Babylon. We have just a privilege that is so unknown by most countries that have ever existed. And we have various ways to affect change. One of them is called voting. That's one opportunity that we have. If we don't like the way things are being done, we have the opportunity to go and vote and change it. In addition to that, we have the right of redress if voting is not getting the job done. And then failing those, many would advocate civil disobedience. Failing everything else, civil disobedience. Well, it certainly doesn't look like something that we'd want to be part of after reading Romans 13. But first of all, let's notice that the key word is civil. Harassing politicians in public while they're trying to eat dinner, which one politician has publicly advocated, is not civil. And that kind of thing should not be done. Encouraging people to blow up the White House, as Madonna did, is not civil. That may be disobedience, but it's not civil disobedience. Defacing buildings, throwing projectiles, smashing windows, stealing merchandise, starting fires, and overturning police cars is not civil. And I affirm unequivocally that those who do such things have committed sin, and they need to repent of those things. Those are not rights that we have in this country. And they should be avoided at all costs. Now, what about civil disobedience? That's uncivil disobedience. We don't have any problem condemning that. Civil disobedience, generally speaking, does not seek to harm any person or anyone's property. And so there is no damage that is done. However, if you choose to disobey the civil government, if a law is violated, even an unjust law, you must be prepared to pay the consequences, which in most cases might be to be arrested or to pay fines. And many people do engage in civil disobedience knowing that they're going to have to do this. Alabama had laws in favor of segregation which were unjust. We know they were unjust. They were eventually struck down. And they were wrong and they were unfair. And redress had not accomplished anything. Voting had not accomplished anything. Rosa Parks, a heroine to most Americans, violated those laws. She was arrested, and her case became bogged down in the courts. I think somebody else's case actually finally was resolved before hers. She was, at the time, secretary of the NAACP in Montgomery. She was prepared to be arrested, and the arrest was probably the least of her problems. She was fired from her job and received death threats for years. However, so far as I know, she died of natural causes. But this would be stressful for any particular individual. Her actions sparked a bus boycott in Montgomery and gained nationwide attention. And of course, there's nothing in particularly wrong with a boycott. When people decide to do it. It may be effective or it may not, but you have the right not to use public transportation or a lot of other things. Nobody says you must. You're not violating any law to do that. Following that were nonviolent marches and protests, which fortunately changed the complexion of society. Likewise, many have peacefully protested against abortion. I don't know how many of you know the history of some of these things. Bernard Nathanson was one of the founders of the National Abortion Right Action League. He was a doctor, and after participating in several abortions, he finally came to his senses and began working for the other side. He was arrested at a sit-in to protest abortion. And so there have been many who have done this in order to call attention to something that is gravely wrong in society. The tide has slowly turned against the practice, but children are still being put to death, maybe a little fewer, instead of 1.5 million, maybe only 1.3 million a year, but that's hardly satisfying. The tide has a little bit turned over the years against the practice of abortion, but it is not back to where it was, and we don't know if it ever will be. By the way, let me recommend seeing the movie Gosnell, The Trial of America's Biggest Serial Killer. If you're not familiar with it, you need to see this. By the way, nobody will review the movie. They don't want people to go see the movie. The news media does not want people to see the movie. Certainly, Planned Parenthood does not want people to see the movie, so they haven't promoted it, and yet, as of a week or so ago, it was the 9th most attended movie in America. Even without any publicity, word has gotten around, but people need to see this movie. The Hebrew midwives would not cooperate with Pharaoh's law. They would not do it. There are times when laws must be broken. Now, civil disobedience is not necessarily one of those, but there are times when laws must be broken. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego defied the most powerful king on earth. They had to, and have a good conscience with God. The apostles defied the Sanhedrin in Acts chapter 5 and verse 29 and said, "We must obey God rather than men." So when it comes to civil disobedience, each person probably should make up his mind as to whether he thinks it will accomplish something good or not. But if taken, one has to prepare for the consequences. And don't be guilty of following a mob, or as it's put in Exodus 23:2, a crowd to do evil. You know, there are people who have devoted themselves to studying mob psychology. And many people who would not dream of doing certain things when they get into a crowd like this will end up doing things they're later ashamed of. So be careful not to ever allow yourself to get to that point where you're going to do something clearly illegal and morally wrong. Well, those are a few thoughts on the subject. I would like to be more definitive, but all I can do is commend you to what the scriptures teach in Romans chapter 13, 1 through 5, to let you know that most of that is personal, not addressing nations. I wish there were a cut and dried answer, you know, should we go to war or not go to war? Yeah, that's easy, we do this. It doesn't always work out that way. I wish it were that simple to say, I don't know any other way to affect change than to oppose an unjust law. But be very careful in choosing to do that, because the warnings that Paul gives are quite severe. Well, those are a few thoughts. I hope some of them have been helpful. But of course, it's not this world, ultimately, that is our home. As we said this morning, we have our citizenship in heaven. And I can guarantee, without any successful contradiction, that everything in heaven is going to be fair. It's all going to be just. It's all going to be pure. You will not have to question anybody's motives for any commandments that we must keep. It will be a joyous time, and the trials of this life will be behind us, and we will be safe from all persecution or forms of tyranny. It will be a time of happiness and peace, and we will be loving and encouraging one another still as we obey the Father in all things. If anyone knows what to do to obey the gospel, as we talked about this morning, we invite you to repent, confess Jesus as the Christ, the Son of God, and be buried with him in baptism. We also invite all of those who are Christians but have not been living as faithfully as you should. If there is some spiritual need we can help you with, come while we stand and while we sing.